Welcome to the Goldenrod Podcast. I'm Ben, and this week I'm joined by fellow Pokemon enthusiast, Luis, to bring you some of the latest and greatest Pokemon news and a few laughs along the way. In this episode, we're discussing a cruel April Fool's joke that raises some interesting questions. We're also talking about the 2024 Pokemon Europe International Championships taking place this weekend. And finally, we'll be discussing comments from Niantic that Pokemon Go's next 10 years are guaranteed. As always, you can jump to a topic using the timestamps in the description below. Luis, do you want to say hello?
Hello. How are we doing?
Very well, thank you. Very well indeed. And how about yourself?
Yeah, not too bad. Not too bad. Unfortunately, Connor couldn't make it this week, but, you know, Ben reached out and I said, yeah, let's go for it.
And I'm glad you did. Do you want to tell the people who you are? Because some people might be thinking, who is this Luis? And maybe the only recognition they've had is when you were on an episode a very, very long time ago, or perhaps seeing you in the comment section. Some people might be getting excited thinking we're inviting on listeners. I don't want to give that impression.
Yeah, no. So I am... basically, Connor's friend and editor on his YouTube channel on Captain Fidget. We've known each other for at least 10 years at this point. We met at university.
Wow.
Yeah, and I mean, personally, I'm a listener to the podcast myself. But I also, well, I mean, I've met you as well. So, you know.
We've met twice now, haven't we?
Yeah, so... It's
good. To the point where the last time we met up and we went to the pub, we got kicked out because all of a sudden we were talking for so long, the woman behind the bar rocked up and was like, oh yeah, just so you know, we're closing now. We're like, oh, okay. That was like, what, 2 hours we were talking for, and it just...
Easily.
Blew back. It was after Pal World was released, and we were... It's so annoying, really, that we didn't have some kind of podcast recording device there. Because we were just
I mean, that
could
have
talking.
Filled up an entire episode's worth of content easily.
Easily could. Should we jump into the first topic?
Absolutely.
Okay, so, Connor, I'm sorry to do this to you, but on the 1st of April, Connor pinged me a message basically saying that Pokemon Legends ZA had been released, the release date was being pulled forward to November the 15th, 2024. He got this information from a tweet that had been put out. The profile had the official Pokemon logo. It had the name of the official Pokemon Twitter account, and it said, "Trainers, we've heard the cries. Pokemon Legends ZA will now be releasing on November 15th, 2024." Connor pinged me, I think, 5 questions in quick succession of not sure what happened to make that change. Is it not on the Switch 2 now? Was it meant for 2025? And basically, people's outrage has brought it forward. Will the game feel rushed now? Before I even had chance to respond, 2 minutes later, he responded with, "Oh god damn it, it's April Fool's Day. Ignore me." A couple of things flashed through my head. I went from being really excited to being really sad to actually kind of being excited again, because pulling it forward does raise a very interesting question: is if they did that, would the game feel rushed? What do you think?
I mean, it's hard to say. The Pokemon Legends Arceus, that didn't release when it was originally scheduled to, did it?
No, that one was delayed by about 3 months. So originally, BDSP and Legends Arceus were supposed to release in the same month of the same year. Legends Arceus was pushed back by 3 months.
Yeah, so first off, Legends Arceus didn't feel rushed, I don't think. I think that it definitely felt like it had the polish which it deserved, ultimately. So I think pulling it forward could potentially give a rushed feel. It may take off that layer of polish that we had in Legends Arceus. I think it's interesting that they chose November, because that does feel very much like a date that they would use.
It does.
That's the date that BDSP was released, and Scarlet and Violet, right?
most of the games nowadays get released in November. November is their release window.
Otherwise, I'd imagine February for Pokemon Day, I assume, which is when Arceus was.
Yes, and the thing about a November release date, it makes sense because you have that build up to the Christmas sales period. So you can catch people in that first couple of months, and anyone that doesn't buy that game in the first month, such as children, for example, they've suddenly got their Christmas present sorted then, if that's what they can get. So saying that it was going to be released in November from this person, you know, very good April Fool's joke, I must admit. Myself, I hope it doesn't get pulled forward now. I am a firm believer that if a game gets pushed back, it has a better chance of being more well-received because it gets that extra bit of time. I would much rather that happen than a game pulled forward, because typically that's not a great sign to me. That's a sign of either they've maybe given up on the game, of there's not a lot we can do. Let's just bite the bullet, get it out there, and we move on. Or it's a case of perhaps the game company being a bit greedy, thinking, "Oh, if we move it forward, we can hit that, you know, a certain sales release, a certain release schedule that we can take advantage of holiday sales." So I'm happy that this isn't the case. I hope it doesn't happen, and I still maintain that the reason it's not occurring in November is because the Switch successor has been moved back. The release window for that has been moved back, and the Pokemon Legends ZA is likely to be released on both the Switch and the Switch successor in the same month.
Sort of a Breath of the Wild treatment.
Yeah, yeah. And I think it makes sense as well, because we've discussed in the past that Game Freak have a habit of releasing games on the last generation console. So they did it with Pokemon Black and White 2. They were bought out when the 3DS was already out. Pokemon Ultra Sun and Ultra Moon were bought out when the Nintendo Switch was already out, because by that point, you've got a bigger install base, and therefore more people are likely to buy it. If this is going to be released on two generations, it kind of... it's that saying of, you know, having your cake and eating it, of people that don't buy the Switch successor, well, they can still play it on the Switch. People that buy it on the Switch successor will hopefully get some benefit from it. So maybe, you know, better frame rate or graphics or better performance. So it'll be interesting to see what they do with that, which I think nicely brings us on to the next topic. I have seen some rumors floating around that the Nintendo Switch successor has not only been confirmed, but the name of it has been confirmed and accidentally released by YouTube in a YouTube advertiser survey, which asked, which of these gaming products would you consider buying? The PlayStation 5, the Xbox Series X, the Switch Attach, or none of the above? Now, others have pointed out a few things here, that Nintendo have a habit of giving their hardware code names during development. The Switch was apparently originally called the NX, yep, which I didn't know about. The Wii was called the Revolution, which I did know about. And another one that I didn't know about, the N64 was originally called the Ultra 64.
Yeah. The GameCube was also Dolphin, I believe, hence the name of the emulator. There is a little picture of a dolphin on one of the, either on the circuit board itself or on one of the processing chips, I believe.
Oh, really? Oh, yeah. I didn't know that. That's so cool.
Nintendo do famously do the whole code name, project name for their systems. I don't know if Switch Attach would be a code name. It seems a little bit out there for that. And secondly, I don't really know what it would mean.
No.
Because if there's one thing that Nintendo have learned, it's don't do what they did with the Wii U.
Exactly.
Do not give your next console the same name as your old one, because people will think it's just an attachment, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And that's why, that's one of the reasons the Wii U fell down, is people saw it as, oh, I've already got the Wii. Do I just buy this extra, you know,
handheld
thing?
It's just a gamepad that links up to the Wii, right?
Yeah. And it completely failed for them. So I can imagine that either they go with... They would have to do one of two things. Either they go completely out there and choose a completely different name to distance themselves from the Switch, or they do what other gaming companies have done of the Switch 2, for example. Like, there's a reason PlayStations are 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, because it's obvious. Oh, it's the successor. Xbox kind of tries to get away from that, but... Yeah. Then decides to then double down and go with really weird naming conventions, which I think has hurt them, because even I'm confused at that this point of, I got it was the Xbox, and then the Xbox 360, then the Xbox One, and then it went in a really more weird direction.
Xbox Series, I mean...
Yes.
That sounds like the entire group of Xbox family consoles.
It does. Like, it's so strange, But unfortunately, some commenters on a Reddit thread that I stumbled across said that they were sure that YouTube just throws in made-up suggestions as part of their marketing research, as they've seen made-up car names and cleaning brands in these surveys. And I think that's just a kind of... What did you mention before we started recording? That it's a way to kind of...
Filter out anomalous results. You know, try to catch the people who are just clicking everything.
Which I've done before, by the way. I don't know if you're the same. It pops up like a YouTube survey, and it's like, okay, I can either wait till this goes down, or I can just... And I just randomly click something and submit, because I want to watch the video. Like, these things, for me, don't work, unfortunately. And let's be honest, if the Switch successor name is going to be a closely guarded secret that only a handful of people at Nintendo know... I wouldn't surprise me if the majority of companies that are currently developing games for the Switch successor, chances are they won't know. They will have a developer kit, and that probably doesn't have any branding or anything else. So it'll be a tightly guarded secret, and they will not reveal it until they are ready to reveal it.
Yeah. 100% that, basically. It's... if we know anything from Nintendo, it's difficult to pry that sort of information out. But let's be honest, it could be literally anything. When they created a revised 3DS, they called it the new Nintendo 3DS. Yes. So nothing is off the table.
It's really not. I do have one question for you, though, Luis. Mm-hmm. Let's say that... Pokemon Legends Z2A, you know, it does release on current and next-gen Nintendo system. Would that make you more inclined to buy the next system? Or actually, would it do the opposite and make you go, well, no, I could just buy it on the current console?
I'm going to be honest. I'm of the volition to probably buy the new console anyway. But there are... release day titles that would clinch it for me to get in it right there and then. Because Breath of the Wild releasing on the Switch got me to buy the Switch.
Oh, did it?
Yeah.
Had you already played it on the Wii U at that point or not?
No. Okay. No. So I went online. I think I got paid possibly the same day that it released, or maybe when pre-orders opened or something like that. And there was zero stock anywhere, save for a warehouse in Spain.
Oh, okay. Right.
Where I paid, I think, pretty much market value. Yeah, because all the other ones were like 200 and, you know, an extra 100 on top of whatever it was going for at the time. And it was only available with the gray Joy-Cons. So I thought, you know what, screw it. And then I ordered Breath of the Wild on Amazon or something like that.
Right.
Yeah. And I think I got the Wii U because Mario Kart 8 was a brand new title and had released on it at the time. So I think Z2A on a new console might get me to go for it.
Oh, wow. Okay.
I mean, I've got nothing but praise for Legends Arceus. Sorry, so.
Yeah, I'm in the same boat that I can understand some of the criticisms of Pokemon Legends Arceus. Sam, who has been on this podcast before, I've spoken with him at length about this, and one of the things he didn't like about it was the lack of battles, because that's what he enjoys about the Pokemon games. He enjoys those like in-depth battles, and I must admit, Legends Arceus, you know, that was the one thing that I feel like they should have had a little bit more, at least in post game.
Yeah, I take back that nothing but praise. I would have liked, peer to peer battles as well.
Yes,
because something which I used to do growing up was playing Pokemon with my brother. He and I would get the alternate color versions of the games. We'd play alongside each other and battle after every gym or what have you. And
oh wow!
I mean, he's at the point now, he's got kids, you know, he doesn't really have much time for games anyway, but something that put him off going for a Switch and going for Legends is you can't really do any of that. So
I get it. I see, like you, I have loads of praise for Legends Arceus, and you know, I'm so happy that we are getting another story set in this Legends universe that they are setting up. I don't have a lot of time to play video games anymore. I don't have a load of disposable money. You seem to get less disposable money as you get older because you have adult things to pay for.
Yeah.
A Nintendo Switch successor, though, I'm really interested in, because out of all the consoles I've ever owned, in I want to say adult life, because nothing will top the amount of time I played on the PlayStation 2. Honestly, the fact that my PS2 still runs despite the hours it put in. After
Funnily
that,
enough,
it's the Nintendo. Go on.
Sorry, I just recently went through the entire Ratchet and Clank quadrilogy, as it were,
okay,
on PS2.
Yeah.
Because you know, I was having those cravings for those days. Just spending all my time probably either being really bad at the games or just constantly playing them on repeat one after the other.
Over and over again.
Every now and again.
Yeah, I get cravings to play Resident Evil Outbreak, which you can't play on anything other than the console it came out on. Yeah. And it was one of those early PlayStation 2 titles where it was like, you can play online with people. I'm like, that's great, but I haven't got a clue how to do that on the PS2. So I had to play with the AI, which wasn't great. And it's just really, really infuriating. But yeah, so the Nintendo Switch is probably my second most played console because of the functionality of, oh, I'm going on the train down to London for a conference. I can play on the Switch. Oh, I'm, you know, going away with my wife for glamping. Oh, I can take the Nintendo Switch and we can plug it into the TV there and we can play games together. Just the versatility of that console, if they keep that for the successor, I'm in. And, you know, if there's a launch day Pokemon title to go along with it and I can get it as a bundle, I think I'm a very happy boy.
Yeah, I mean, they can stick down this road now if they want to. The road that has paved the Steam Deck and the PlayStation backbone, right? The real push towards mobile gaming, but not on mobile phones, you know what I mean?
I know exactly what I mean. Yeah, it's a good way to put
that. So they can go for the Switch too. And give it 4K. And, you know, I heard rumors that it was going to be using, what was it, DLSS to upscale. And apparently it's going to make everything look insane and they can have ray tracing and all that sort of stuff. And Switch 2 is going to be a powerhouse. Not sure how accurate that actually is, but, you know, if they can get it up to 4K when docked, then I'm going to be happy.
Yeah. Honestly, I maintain that the graphics I always want good graphics, but graphics will never sell a console for me. And that's the reason why I didn't go straight in on a PS5 or whatever the new Xbox is. Like, I'm currently playing Final Fantasy 16 on PlayStation 5. It's not my PlayStation 5. I lent it off my brother because I just can't. There isn't enough. I don't play games enough to warrant a console that I can't take on the move. It's either I'm in the living room and I'm playing it, or I'm not. Whereas the Switch is one of those where, you know, when me and my wife go to bed and she's watching Love Island or whatever, I'm there. I'm happy. I'm on my Switch, you know. I'm just playing a game. So, yeah, that being able to play anything on the move and that mobile element that you touched on is just fantastic. It's a really good way to do it. So, yeah, fingers crossed. Should we move on to the next topic, the 2024 Pokemon Europe International Championships for Pokemon Go, Unite, VGC, and TCG? They're nearly here. In fact, if you are listening over the weekend, it's happening right now. They're taking place in London between Friday the 5th of April and ending on Sunday the 7th. If you can't make it, like me and Lewis, you can watch the streams on Twitch and YouTube. And apparently, this is a new thing, I think, that if you catch the streams live on Twitch and if you're watching for at least 30 minutes, you can receive a code via Twitch Drops for an exclusive timed research opportunity to catch the Pokemon used by LNDS Rogef, I think, who was the winner of the 2024 Latin America International Championships. I asked you before we started whether or not you were going, and I was surprised to find out that you weren't, because you went to Worlds and what was the other one?
I think it was Worlds 2022 and the European Internationals London 2023.
Wow, okay, so you did two on the bounce.
Yeah. And basically, I was told that I was going to Worlds by Connor.
By who? By Connor, yeah.
By Connor, yeah. And then obviously when I heard that European Championships was happening, London, that next March, I thought, you know what? I had so much fun. Yeah, let's do it again. I can't make it this year, unfortunately. It is certainly an experience worth doing if you ever get the opportunity. Then go for it. There's such a palpable atmosphere. Obviously, Worlds was a little bit more so than Euros was, but regardless, you know, you are vibing with a whole bunch of other nerds at the end of the day, let's be honest.
Love that.
You've got people who spend all their time thinking about the trading cards or thinking about how their team in Scarlet and Violet needs to shape up to the meta. You know, you've got people who spend all day every day walking around their local city playing Pokemon Go, doing all the routes, doing all the research. Their research list is empty at this point, mm-hmm. Right?
Yeah.
And everybody's all just together. And you've got people who are doing casual playing on their Switches. You got people who are in teams, sat there doing Unite, doing their practice rounds, doing VGC. Testing up their stats. You've got people who are buying merch, buying Pokemon cards, people taking photos. It's a buzz. And it's a lot. There is a lot of walking around. You spend a lot of time on your feet. You know, there are side events that you can enter into as a person there. I've done some build and battle TCG events there. You get a box that comes with a pre-select set of cards and some booster packs. And then it's just build a deck, face off against some people. You can win some points. You can trade the points for prizes at the desk. In fact, let me pull down something which we picked up last time.
Go for it. While you're just doing that, I looked at the train prices on Sunday because I also can't make it for the full weekend, unfortunately. Work on Friday and other commitments. Saturday, celebrating my brother's birthday. Sunday, though, I have a free day, and I was half tempted to go with my daughter. Oh, is that a D20?
It is, yeah. It's technically laid out like a spin-down D20, so the numbers count around each other, 2, 3, 19, 20
Oh, yes.
At the bottom there.
Yes.
But yeah, it's a novelty plush. Nobody was picking them up because it wasn't a Pokemon item.
I get that, yeah. How many points did you need for that then?
I can't remember. I want to say maybe 120.
Okay. See, that sounds a lot, but how many games was that?
Well, I played a couple of games worth and I picked up like 60 to 80 points and then Connor offered me some of his. That was very kind of him. There's also the Pokemon Center where I picked up this t-shirt if you're watching on YouTube. It is Gengar. It is wonderful.
That's amazing.
So
I
yeah.
love that. So it's a great atmosphere to see. You're making me hyped for this, and I'm not even going, but I'm half tempted to go now because I can't remember what I was doing last year, but the year before it was the same weekend that I was getting married. So that's why it didn't happen, unfortunately, which was such a shame. But I would love to go at some point. So maybe next year's the year, Lewis. Maybe that is when I will be going.
Keep your finger on the pulse for those tickets. Make sure you got some spending money. You'll enjoy yourself.
Yeah, I think next year I need to go because unfortunately, even though I didn't go, I have watched elements of the previous 2 years. So Worlds, I remember the Sunday. So I got married on the Saturday, and then me, my wife, and my daughter came home on the Sunday, and we were just knackered, just absolutely shattered. So me and my daughter ended up watching a lot of Worlds on YouTube on the TV in the living room, and then for the Euros I was working from home at the time, so it was absolutely fantastic because I could just watch it back on YouTube. So it's like 7 or 8 hour streams and just being able to watch all these battles and, you know, every now and again look over and see what's happening and stuff. There is, from what I've heard, a great atmosphere and a great vibe, and the YouTube and Twitch streams also showcase that because of the presenters, the commentators. Like, they bring so much energy to them. And I remember that the highlight for me wasn't Pokemon Go, wasn't VGC, wasn't TCG. It was Unite. Seeing teams in Unite battle was phenomenal. And it was one of those things where, you know, TCG... it's probably the one I enjoyed the least watching, mainly because at the time I wasn't big into the trading card game. So they're doing things really fast, and I'm just sat there going, I have no idea what's going on. Pokemon Go is then, you know, next one up, but there's only so much like tapping the screen and stuff. VGC, there's a lot more kind of the commentators are talking a lot more about, you know, potential matchups and tactics and stuff like that. But Pokemon Unite was something that you don't need any background in. You can literally just throw that up on screen and the commentators just take you through that match. You don't need to know, you know, you don't even need to have ever played Unite, I don't think, to be able to appreciate.
It's very easy to teams. Pick up.
Yeah. Yes.
You've got two teams coming at each other from either side. They start fighting each other. One of them goes down. The other one makes it into one of the scoring zones. They throw it in. Big numbers flash up. Everybody screams.
Yeah.
What's not to love? What? I mean, there
definitely
is.
Definitely not. Yeah, you're right.
It's a lot more spectator friendly. You've got those teams. You got people wearing the uniforms. It feels very esports.
Yes.
And yeah, again, especially if you're there as well, you've got crowds around you, people chanting team names. It's a wild experience, yeah.
Wow. Are you going to be watching it, though?
Potentially. I'll probably flick through after the fact.
Yes. I think that's what I'll be doing this year, simply because of I don't have, you know, there's what, Pokemon Go, Unite, VGC, TCG, and then each of them, I think, has a stream. That's how they've done it in the past. Or there's multiple streams going on for the different stuff. There is that many hours of content, I cannot commit to watching it all, so I'll probably do what I did last year of, okay, it's all finished, right, let's skip through to like the semi-finals and then the finals for each of them, just to it just gives you enough information, you get a flavor of it then without having to watch everything.
Yeah, the good thing is as well, between games, you know, they'll have those little pre-made videos that they'll put together and throw up. But with Unite, they have the option to go back and do highlights of previous matches, because the way that the leaderboards come together, you get the opportunity once you hit a certain level that if you get knocked out, you won't immediately leave the tournament. There's like the loser's catch-up round.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So you can see, I think it was last year at Worlds, one of the people who got knocked out at that point smashed their way back up through the loser's table to rematch the team who took them out. And I think
Connor told me about this. Yeah.
If the losers win that one, they have one more rematch to see who finally goes through. And that can be nerve-wracking. Because if you're rooting for the underdogs, or if, you know, your favorite team was the one who knocked them out and then they come back into it, you want them to knock them out again. So there's a lot more tension. It's great.
Good. That sounds absolutely phenomenal. I'm looking forward to watching it back. And you're right, I do need to look at getting there next year, because this is two now that I've said that three that I've said I wanted to go, and I just haven't got round to it, unfortunately. So next year is the year. Speaking of TCG, A-spec cards. Do you want to break this down for somebody who has no idea what is going on?
Yeah, so the latest set in the Pokemon trading card game is Scarlet and Violet Temporal Forces, which brings back the Ace Spec cards, which originally debuted in Pokemon Black and White TCG Boundaries Crossed. The idea of the Ace Spec card, are you familiar with Radiant cards, Ben?
They're special cards that you can only have one of in your entire deck, and they usually have some kind of ability that helps you to get ahead. Is
yes,
that about right?
Absolutely. Yes. So Radiant Greninja, for example, was one of the leading Radiant cards the past few years. I'm not sure if that one has been phased out now or not. But the idea was it could, allow you to do things with energies.
Yes.
Yeah. So just throwing out energy left, right, and center, which obviously helps you to build up your Pokemon and get in those big hits. Ace spec cards are similar in that you can only have one in your deck.
Okay.
And they also come with, you know, ultra sort of broken abilities and whatnot. So for example, there's one item called the Prime Catcher. It's an item card. And it allows you to switch in one of your opponent's benched Pokemon to the active spot. If you do, switch your active Pokemon with one of your benched Pokemon.
Okay.
So it's basically a switch card.
Okay.
I don't know if one of the current switch cards is a supporter, but it has the same effect as one of the support cards. It's Guzma from Sun and Moon.
Yeah.
And support cards you can only play one of in your turn. So having this Ace Spec card would allow you to also play a support card as well as this card.
Oh, okay. Interesting. So it's just a fresh way to mix up the battles and do more things, which I think, as someone that has only really played Pokemon TCG casually and then picked it up recently with the release of, I always forget which one it is. Pokemon, what's the new, it's, got my phone, Pokemon TCG Live, is it? Or whatever it is now. Whatever
TCG
the latest
Live,
version,
yeah.
That's the one. Someone that has only recently picked that up, it's quite nice to have something new thrown in there just to keep people engaged. So, for example, when I came back, I was suddenly, I'm playing catch-up. I've got EX cards that I'd never really used before. I got the Radiant cards that I'd never used before. The fact that the first time one of my EX cards got knocked out, and I was like, wait, where's my opponent taking two energies? And then realized, not two energies, two prize cards, only to realize, I really need to play catch-up. And playing quite well, actually. I'm quite looking forward to these new new ways to play the decks.
Yeah.
Now, I have got one in front of me that is the artwork has been released, which is Neo Upper Energy, which is going to be included in this Scarlet and Violet. As long as this card is attached to a Pokemon, it provides two normal energy. I think that is the star. If this card is attached to a stage two Pokemon, this card provides energy type every type of energy, but provides only two energy at a time. Yes. What I have noticed playing this and playing it more and seeing this card is it seems like they are building in ways to just speed up matches.
Because yeah, I mean, that sounds about right, I'll be honest.
Like, the fact that you can take more prize cards, you've got more ways to power up your Pokemon that do more attacks faster. I don't know if you've played the old version of the trading card recently, but it is so slow and cumbersome because a lot of them are attached four energies to deal 60 damage. Oh, flip a coin, by the way, and if it's tails, it does no damage. Like, the game is so slow.
I think that's something that comes with the game evolving over time anyway. Yes. I mean, don't forget these ace spec cards. You can't have more than one in your deck. Mm-hmm. So this extra power is nice, especially when it typically comes in the form of item cards rather than your Radiant Pokemon cards. I've just sent you one, actually. It's called the Master Ball. Who knows, maybe we can get it to pop up on screen. Search your deck for a Pokemon, reveal it, put it into your hand, shuffle your deck. So it gives you the same effect of some of the other ball cards, but with the added power of you can just search for any Pokemon. There's no restriction.
A little bit busted.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's great.
I don't know if there are any ace spec Pokemon. Probably not.
When I had a look at the ones that were available in black and white, I couldn't see any. They were predominantly item cards.
Yeah.
Which probably is a way to, you know, if you've got EX cards over here, you've got Radiant cards over here. It feels right to just have a subset of item cards that have that level of, power boost or whatever terminology you want to use. It makes sense.
Yeah. Just before we move on, there is also the Ancient and Future effect. I want to say these have been around for maybe one or two sets so far, but I believe they are also getting a bit more in the way of options of cards in Temporal Forces as well. For example, the booster energy, you're aware of that in the video game?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So that also has an ancient version in the trading cards.
So I've been told, yeah.
Yeah. So all in all, I think there could be quite a lot to look forward to. I don't play a lot of TCG currently, but I do pop onto it every now and again, TCG Live. I've been picking up the free decks and packs. So
yes, same. Yeah. Right. Let's move on to the next topic. Pokemon Go's next 10 years are guaranteed, promises the developer Niantic. So Pokemon Go is approaching its ninth year, which is crazy to think about.
Yeah.
And we've had recent comments from Pokemon Go developer and senior vice president at Niantic, Ed Wu, who told fans that the game is safe for another 10 years. In an interview with Eurogamer, Wu said, and I quote, "It's bananas to think this thing is going to be going into its next decade soon. It's not only healthy, but it's growing. And we're putting a lot of investment into ensuring that it's a great game and has really firm foundations for the next 10 years. Wu continued, "As we gear up for that 10th anniversary, we want a refresh that's benefiting that next decade. We're refreshing our avatar system next with a more improved experience, updated assets, a modern system that can offer more customization." Wu was also prompted on reports that Pokemon Go's revenue is decreasing. Wu responded with, "When we see third-party reports on Pokemon Go's revenues decreasing, I can say very clearly that they are wrong. And we know they are wrong because they don't have access to that data. They don't have visibility into non-mobile numbers. Pokemon Go grew last year, including last bring. There's a few things there. Myself and Connor have discussed the revenue side of things before, about, you know, these third-party reports saying, okay, the amount of money they're making is coming down. Unfortunately, there's not a really a lot you can... There's not a lot of facts you can glean because it's kind of he said, she said. And, you know, these third-party apps base it on certain metrics, which I'm sure they think are accurate. And then Pokemon Go, Niantic on the other side, they're not going to release that information. They're not going to suddenly turn around and go, well, actually, we made whatever amount it is. But I think it is fair to say that with the amount of stuff in the shop at the moment that is, you know, that you pay anywhere from 99 pence for a Pokemon Community Day add-on to, you know, $14.99 for Pokemon Tour events, I don't think Niantic is struggling for money. But I think the exciting thing I took from is it sounds like they have at least some of the future roadmap of these next couple of years planned out. Do you have any thoughts on what they might be?
I mean, it's difficult. Because at this point, we've got all of the available Pokemon.
Well, we've got most of the available Pokemon. So there are some Pokemon still missing in Pokemon Go from Gen 5 onwards. So okay. There's one or two from Gen 5, one or two from Gen 6. I mean, and then...
Other than legendaries, there's nothing that springs to my mind, but obviously, yeah.
There are basic Pokemon from mainly the Gen 8 starters aren't in there yet.
Okay.
And Gen 9, they've started rolling out. So when we think about the next couple of years, they've got at least three generations they can still pull from. And if they do, even if they do, okay, one generation a year. That's still 3 years. By that point, Gen 10's out. So that gives them another couple of years to roll out Pokemon. And
that's true.
Let's not forget that they're still introducing Megas. I don't think we've got all the Megas introduced in that game. And when they finally release all the Megas, well, where did they go from there? Well, they can either go Dynamaxing or Terrestrialization as the next big gimmick. There is life in this.
Okay, yeah. And we can probably assume that the regular mainline games are going to still be pumping out. So they'll have Pokemon to draw from. That's fair. They could go for another gimmick. I think it would be... Yeah, I mean, things like Dynamaxing, Terrestrializing, that's only going to have an effect in battles, but it could really ramp up the effect of battles, especially given that Pokemon Go has made its way into the World Championships, so that they could attempt to spice things up that way. They could attempt to introduce their own gimmick. They were given a shot with introducing a Pokemon.
They were, yes.
There's not much that's been done with it, but it worked.
Yeah. It was, and I think I've said this before. My tinfoil hat theory was that it was just an error encoding with Ditto, and they went, "Oh, let's just roll with it." I have nothing to base that on outside of the fact that it kind of looks like Ditto, and the ring is potentially the hitbox. That's all I've got to go on, and I know that people could just rip that theory to shreds, which is why I said it's tinfoil. That's whatever you call it, theory. But yeah, I am actually surprised they haven't introduced more new Pokemon. I mean, other than those two and Gimme Ghoul's roaming form, which is available in Pokemon Go, they are the only three, I believe, that are only available in that game.
Other than, you know, the little hats. But they're not Pokemon. Yeah, they're
you're right. They are. I'm still annoyed. I'm still absolutely furious to this day that
they saw Team Fortress 2 and they thought, "Yep, that works. We're going with that.
That works. Hats. Because it annoys me because I've got about 200 Pikachus with special hats in my in my, you know, box, in my storage.
Yeah.
And I can't put them into Pokemon Home because they just, you cannot transfer them, which I wouldn't mind, except I currently have some versions of Pikachu with hats in Pokemon Home. So it infuriates me. It's either let me have all of them or let me have none of them in Pokemon Home. And what I've got is this halfway house of random Pikachus with hats that I've had for, you know, coming up to, you know, 7 or 8 years at this point. I can't get into Home.
I think I've got
home.
A 2016 Spooky Witches hat Pikachu somewhere. Like, just sat there in the corner gathering dust.
Yeah, can't do anything with
it. I mean, there are a couple of Bulbasaur. I think there's a Snorlax. There's a Caterpie with a little ribbon. Cottonee came out recently with a leaf on it.
Yes. Yeah.
Nowhere to put them.
Nowhere to put them. They're just stuck in Pokemon Home. And the worst part is when you get a shiny of one of them. And you think, that's absolutely useless because I can't do anything with it outside of potentially putting it in a gym to show it off. Can't transfer it. You just can't do anything with it, unfortunately.
I transfer all my shinies out to my Switch.
Yeah,
because
I
can put them in Scarlet and Violet, and then as soon as Home is compatible with the next game, I can just throw them in there.
I'm still annoyed, though, that in Pokemon Home, it gives you that G symbol. For any Pokemon that's transferred over. The mobile version doesn't do that, but the Nintendo Switch version does. And it's almost like it's a badge of dishonor. Yeah, you got the shiny, but you didn't get it the way we normally
They got it in
shiny.
Home. It's not real.
It's not. It's not that. I mean, yeah, the odds are what? One in whatever it is. It's. I wish they'd remove that. But other than that, Pokemon Go for me is a great shiny hunting tool. Because I want to complete shiny living decks, but as someone that doesn't have a load of time or patience, Pokemon Go is a great way to just do it casually.
So I never really had any shiny Pokemon until like the Switch era of games. And then I heard, last year or something, that shinies are actually pretty common on Community Day. I have been signing into them, doing them honestly while I'm at work, just in the background. Like, I can't really walk anywhere apart from on my breaks. But it's enough. I think I've been lucky enough to get at least one for each line of each evolution.
Yeah.
So I evolve them through. I pay 99p for the Community Day research. Have a little bit of fun with it, and then throw them onto the Switch.
Yeah, funnily enough, one of the ones that... So I did the exact same thing. I think there's only been one Community Day where I didn't get all three shiny. So for each stage, Charmander Community Day came up a few months back. I was over the moon because I had tried to get a shiny Charmander in so many games, including Let's Go Pikachu, and I've just never been able to get one. So to be able to get them is phenomenal, and I think the Community Days are fantastic. And now that you can use Campfire to meet up with people.
Yes.
So we had the Mewtwo Community Day, or Shadow Mewtwo was available over the weekend. I literally jumped on that. I looked around, found one. I was like, oh, I'm heading there. Is anyone else heading there? I'm going with my daughter. And managed to get five of us that managed to beat it. So that community element that I think used to be a negative for me because of living in a rural area and not having that in-game functionality to be able to meet up. The fact that they've addressed that is huge for a rural player like me. I have no doubts that they will try to keep this going for as long as they can. And I'd imagine as long as they have people buying things in-game, they will continue to do it. And I think one question I did have for you is the Community Day research that you paid like £1 for, is it worthwhile? Because I've seen it and I've never done it.
So as far as I'm aware, it increases your encounter rate for the Community Day Pokemon.
Mm-hmm.
It gives you research that's specifically tied to them and grants you encounters with that Pokemon as rewards for completing the research. It's really easy to do. And I have had some shinies come out of that research reward just by chance, I assume. And yeah, it's a little bit of, something to occupy me for a couple of hours while all this is happening.
Yeah.
I mean, for 99p, I think it's, I think it's worth it. I wouldn't pay a fiver for it.
No, that's the thing with me with Pokemon Go is that I think the prices for the majority of stuff are too much, but they're that much because people are paying for it. So, of course, as a company, you're going to go, well, if we can make money from players, of course they're going to do it. I have only ever... how much have I put into Pokemon Go? £15. I know that because when it first came out, I bought a load of the coins for £10. Well, it was £7.99. It was £8. Because I thought, you know what? This developer... never heard of them, and I want Pokemon Go to stick around and do well, therefore I'm going to give them some of my money. And this was at a time where most games were, you know, 59. Remember when Apple, it was always 59 pence for a game. You're like, oh, this is so much value. It's amazing. I thought I'll give them a little bit of money because it was free. And then the Shiny Mew, when that came out, I was like, oh, it's £4.99, but I've always wanted a Shiny Mew, and this is the way I'm going to get it.
How far through that are you now?
I've done it now.
Oh, you have? Okay, good.
I did it.
I would not be that far through.
No. One of the tasks was, I think, walk 151 kilometers, which took me a while, but I got there. And I am now starting to run out of things to do in Pokemon Go. As long as I have a fresh amount of things to keep me occupied, because there have been times where I have no research to do, and therefore... I log in, I catch a Pokemon, I complete a one of the research tasks, and then I'm done. Pokemon Go for me is in a really good spot right now. Despite my frustrations with some of the paywalled content, the fact that they are improving the experience for all players. So, for example, I spoke, I think, last week or the week before with Connor, who doesn't play it that much, about the party-up mechanic. I think that's a great mechanic. And while I have seen on Twitter and Reddit a load of people complaining about it because they don't play in with friends or in communities, which I understand, as someone that plays with my daughter, it's a fantastic function. Absolutely brilliant. The ability... to what's the other thing they've done? They've done campfire, which allows you to meet up and do all that. Remote raids, fantastic. Still annoyed that they put the price of them up. I still think that
I've done a couple of remote raids through campfire. So
it's the fact that they have taken something and then built on it, because originally research tasks weren't a thing. Like when that came out, that wasn't a thing. Pokemon gyms got revamped. And the way you earn coins became more reliable. The fact that they, despite the fact there is some research that they roll out and it costs money, there is some research that they roll out and it's absolutely free. You know, introducing Team Rocket, and then the
Go
Grunts,
Rocket.
The next level. Pardon?
Go Rocket. Yeah.
They've implemented them as well, gifting as well.
They've had some of the people from the other side of the Ultra Wormhole come in as
they have
research givers. So I've still got Jesse and James's quest.
Have you? Wow.
Still not finished that. Old. I've got good 20 or 30 research tasks just sat, not done. If you want my login details... feel free.
Do it for you. Well, I'm not going to take you up on that offer, simply because when my daughter started and I created her account, I was like, how much research have you got to get through? This is ridiculous. And she's still making her way through it. And this is me that when I go on that research tab and I scroll down, I've got things from like Halloween 2018 and things like that. I just keep scrolling down and finding all these dead old ones. But I guess the point I'm making is that, you know, they, but all the criticisms that Niantic get, we have to remember that they haven't just put something out and gone, okay, we're just gonna maximize profits and do the bare minimum we can for as long as possible and then like die off. And it's probably because they've got a cash cap. So of course they want to keep this going as long as possible. The fact that they are putting in work and effort. So I have no doubt that, next 10 years, I don't think they have a roadmap for the full 10 years, but they surely have a roadmap for the next 3 to 4 years easily.
Yeah, easily.
Let's move on to a question that we have had this week, courtesy of King Nido. What is your favorite art style for Pokemon games, and what would you like to see in the future or your ideal game? Now, I'm assuming when you say art style, you mean how the characters are, like whether or not it's sprite based, whether or not it's chibi 3D style, whether or not it's more realistic proportions of people and Pokemon, or the true chibi style from BDSP.
I mean,
that's what I took from that.
In a way, each game, or at least each generation, does have a unique look and feel about it. Mm-hmm. You know, the even Ruby Sapphire and Emerald versus Fire Red and Leaf Green have slightly different looks and feels to them. But yeah, I mean, do you have an answer straight away, or?
I played Pokemon from Gen 1 up until Gen 4 and then jumped off it. And then I didn't come back then until the 3DS era. So I was absolutely over the moon when they moved to the 3DS in that 3D style. And I thought at the time it was the right way to go. And it's only as I've gotten older, I've realized the limitations of going 3D for Game Freak. Now, I think if you gave this to a lot of other developers, they'd probably do a better job. Game Freak, unfortunately, they always seem to lag behind the current, what's the word I'm looking for? Like, just how 3D games are, the way they're built, like, they follow a similar pattern, like, in terms of, you know, if someone does an open world game and they do something well, you'll then see version elements of that. So, for example, Assassin's Creed had the towers that unlock parts of the maps. And then all of a sudden, all open world games had some kind of equivalent of that.
Yeah.
And yet, Game Freak always seems to lag behind what should be a standard. And it's almost like they bring out something and they go, look at this amazing feature. It's like, yeah, we've had that in video games for 10 years. Are you living in a silo? Do you not know? Do you not play other video games? I think based on everything, while we've moved to 3D and I can enjoy Pokemon games in 3D, I think that it means they have to do more with their time, whereas sprites, there's a reason why so many indie developers make games that are, you know, that kind of sprite artwork, because they are probably faster, less intensive to produce. And I have said this before about Octopath Traveler on the Nintendo Switch is a great kind of 2.5 sprite-based game where it is sprite-based, but it has that 3D pop and loop to it.
Yeah.
I would love to see Pokemon experiment with that. I would love to see a game that has that kind of feature, but if they did that as a one-off, they're building an entire new game from scratch. But if they built a series on that, obviously there's efficiencies to be made there. It's the same thing with the 3D models. They can reuse them.
I feel like they were caught in a situation. I think the move to 3D was partly because Nintendo really wanted them to use the 3D screen function of the 3DS.
Yeah.
And it's much easier to sell that with a 3D model game. I think it's probably easier to... I mean, don't get me wrong, you can have a sprite-based game in the style of, say, Black and White, which, let's be honest, was a really good look for Pokemon.
Oh, yes.
And have them pop out like that. But when you're trying to sell the Pokemon world as something that you would want to be part of, that breaks the illusion. That very much feels like, hey, you are looking at a game with layers rather than a world. So in terms of trying to sell a Pokemon world and use the 3D feature, that's why they ended up going that way. And as a result, it has caused... basically, it's caused Game Freak to start again in terms of graphic development, assets, and building the games. I think they did a really good job with Scarlet and Violet in getting those textures in and taking those steps forward. You know, they are attempting to go with the current trend with the open world aspect. They need more resources. And we've all been saying it for years.
No, you are right. You know, it's well documented that the team at Pokemon is small for a video game developer of, you know, the output that they put out. I think that, you know, if they do want to put out a game every single year, which I get from a business perspective, I get it. It makes sense. You want to make those money. But unfortunately, what that means is you're kind of hamstrung by how much you can actually do. And I think that a 3D Pokemon game every single year, it will catch up to you in terms of you don't have as much time as you need. And I think that if they don't want to go back to the sprite style, I think what they should do is the BDSP style should be, you know, one of those three that they do every 3 years. So if we get Legends, a gen, whatever the next gen is, and then a remake, maybe the remake should be that true GB style. And the reason why is BDSP, while... okay, so my criticisms with BDSP aren't to do with the look of it. It's to do with the fact that it was just literally a remaster of...
a one-to-one upscale, yeah.
Yes, which if they'd have called it, this is Gen 4
HD
make, or something like that, I would have been
more
Diamond
and Pearl HD, yeah.
Yeah, I would have been like, that's fine. I'm okay with that. And the chibi sprite style, I think, works with those kind of remakes because it's like, oh, okay, it's a cute way to bring an old game to a modern day console. I'm completely on board with that.
Screens.
And the great thing... pardon?
Modern day screens, let's be honest.
Modern day screens, yeah. Exactly. And if they're not going to release these old games on modern day consoles, this is a way they can do it. And the chibi style that they have in that, I think, would be a lot easier to develop than what they did for Sword and Shield and Scarlet and Violet, where in Legends Arceus, where they have to create an open world, because the chibi style in BDSP allows you to hide the limitations of, you know, oh, what's behind that, those trees there? Well, nothing is behind those trees there. That's the whole point of the style, is it allows you to hide some of those limitations. The move to, you know, Legends Arceus and Scarlet and Violet, you can't do that. What's behind that forest? Oh, right. Just grass. Like, you can't hide those things. So you would then have to spend more time filling in those blanks. And I must admit, this is coming from somebody who knows nothing about game development, okay? But just from an outsider looking in, it does look like those would be a lot easier. So maybe that's what they should do, is, okay, one of every those 3 years is these kind of demakes, HDs, whatever you want to call it, and that allows them to put in less time for those games, which allows them to put in more time for the other games coming out in those other 2 years. So it's almost like that buffer, that break, whatever you want to do.
So going back to favorite art style, shall we try and break it down? because I think you make a good point. We've got three different sort of genres to look at, right? So we've got modern style. We've got pixel art style.
Yep.
And then we've got sort of spin-off, right?
Okay.
So if we've got those three kind of games, which style would you go for? So in terms of pixel, if they were going to make a brand new pixel-based Pokemon game, they can go for the dot matrix style of the Game Boy. They can go for the sort of animated bend and squish of Gen 5, or they can go for something a bit more broad line like Gen 3, Gen 4. Or Mystery Dungeon. Because that was a completely different style of art.
Yeah, I haven't played much of Mystery Dungeon to the point where I can't remember. I have played it. I just can't remember much about it. But if I had to choose one of them, it'd be the Gen 5 style, because Gen 5's Pokemon felt alive in a way that they don't in the modern games. And, you know, you come into battle, they're all moving around and stuff. And unfortunately, it doesn't translate well to Gen 8 and Gen 9, but to a point where they can only give those models so much life and character. And, you know, that kind of sprite pixel art style allows you to hide the limitations of that, which is phenomenal. And I think that I think that that kind of sprite style, unfortunately, now that we've moved to 3D, I struggle to see how they would then move away from 3D without it being seen as, oh, you're going backwards again rather than forwards. And the only way I could see them maybe going to that style is in a spin-off. Don't see it in a mainline game again, and I don't think I see it in Legends now. Or the remakes. I think it has to be something as a spin-off, or, you know, some kind of demake. Like, oh, you know, it amazes me that Pokemon and Game Freak has this wide wealth of things, and they don't try what I think would probably get them a load of money of, okay, you want Sword and Shield on mobile? Well, he's a demake. He is Gen 8 demake. Like, things like that just feel like it's a great opportunity just to, like, the fact that we haven't got a mainline or spin-off Pokemon style, true Pokemon style game on mobile blows my mind.
So how would you feel about if they went with what some of the fans would no doubt go absolutely nuts for and rip all their hair out? Black and White 3 on Switch in pixel art sprite style.
See, that to me works. And the reason why is because it's a sequel and it's not a brand new game, so it's built off something else. But also the fact that 1 and 2 were that style, so why would 3 not be that style?
Because, I mean, I believe those games are made with 3D models, just designed to look so everything still looks as though it's on a flat pixel plane.
Oh, right, okay. Because
the battles themselves, I believe, are 3D environments. The Pokemon are flat sheets, but they're layered sheets so that their head model can do this while their body model doesn't, right?
Oh, okay, that's cool.
I believe the houses are 3D modeled, same as they were in Gen 4 as well, because the Nintendo DS perfectly capable of producing 3D models. And then you play a sprite, so flat images that are slightly leaning back.
Yeah.
So it's something they could do.
Whether or not they do, it is another thing altogether, though.
So, sorry.
No, go on, go on.
I was going to say, moving on to 3DS and Switch era. Favorite art style?
Auras. Mega Ruby, Alpha Sapphire. It's the right balance of chibi style, kind of human proportions without going too realistic. Because the problem, this is another problem Pokemon have, of Pokemon sizes don't translate well once you move out of the sprite era, because you have Pokemon that are either way too big or way too small. As sprites, you can get away with it because your brain is going, well, of course it's not real. I can tell it's not real, and I'm okay with these proportions being slightly off. The moment you move to Gen 9, it's like, you know, everyone knows Wailord is absolutely massive. Joltig is absolutely tiny, and it just breaks the immersion a little bit, because suddenly it feels like, oh, this doesn't feel right. Whereas Auras, I feel like, can balance that of, okay, the Wailord doesn't need to be a true size because the people aren't a true size. So it works.
Yeah. Because in the overworld and whatnot, your characters are pretty chibified, but not probably quite as far as BDSP went.
Yes.
And then you've got those cutscene versions of them where they're nearly human size, but not quite.
That always baffled me, because I didn't notice that the first time I played it. It's only in the last couple of years doing YouTube content that I've noticed it. And I was like, oh, okay, that's cool. And it made me realize that, hold on, they've had to create two character models for load of the cat. And I couldn't wrap my head around why they did it, because it's just, it's more time, like, not wasted, but because I think that when they do those animations of, like, I always remember the professor, when you battle the professor in X and Y, and then it transitions to that battle, I'm like, oh, okay, this actually looks really good, but that's because it's, like, it's just that cutscene. Yeah. If it was in the overworld, I'd be like, oh, this looks a little bit off.
Yeah. And I think part of the transition to open world, and even to a degree, even I want to say in Sword and Shield, having the one character model for everything, some cutscenes don't seem to do as well as they could have done in the Omega Ruby Alpha Sapphire way of doing things.
Yeah. So are you agreed with me or not? And you don't have to, that is,
see,
possibly. Go on.
I do agree with you. I think it's very good. I liked the sort of aesthetic of Sun and Moon and Ultra Sun, Ultra Moon, which are a bit of a bridge between the two sides, I want to say. Yeah. But then you add some really cool stuff going on outside of that, like the paint splash effect behind the health bar and little things like that, which were just nice little touches. But at the same time, for the Switch era, I think Legends Arceus has a beautiful art style.
It has that kind of...
They went for the watercolor sort of aesthetic. That painted... What's the one that's on parchment?
I know what you mean, though. Yeah, yeah.
And I would like to see them lean into that a bit harder.
Yes.
I would like to see a game that really goes in with the art style. I don't think Legends Z2A is going to do that. They may go for an 1800s Parisian aesthetic, but it's not going to be the painted anime almost of Legends Arceus.
No, and you know what the good thing is about that art style for Legends Arceus is it lends itself to cutscenes really well, because you don't actually then need to have full 3D model cutscenes. You can just have imagery, because it's telling, it leads into that telling the tale. I think back to Sword and Shield. You know, when you get up to the top of the tower and Rose is like monologuing and Leon's there trying to talk him down, and it's just like, it's just loaded still images. Doesn't work in Sword and Shield. That would work absolutely fine, Legends Arceus.
Yeah, you put a parchment paper style filter over everything. You have them holding on still images, maybe slightly moving off to one side as the text writes on underneath. And you're golden.
Yeah, you are absolutely golden. And Legends Arceus, the battle, the transition into battle, those like ink blotches and then everything pops.
Brush strokes.
They
did great with the user interface on that. And then we got all the promo material for Scarlet and Violet, and it was just
looked terrible.
Little square, little rectangles.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking, hold on a moment, are they going for an aesthetic? No. They weren't going for an aesthetic.
Yeah, they weren't, honestly. It blows my mind that for so many things that Legends Arceus pushed forward in terms of, you know, Scarlet and Violet Sword and Shield came out, and I was like, okay, yeah, I've enjoyed them for what they are, but they didn't blow me away. To then Legends Arceus, Legends Arceus came out, and just falling in love with that game because it basically went, here's Pokemon, and we're just getting rid of all the parts that are stale. At this point, we are looking at new ways to ramp up the battle system. We're looking at new ways to incorporate Pokemon in the overworld. We're looking at a brand new catching system. We're looking at new items that you can use, a refreshing story that doesn't revolve around gyms, end of the world, and Elite Four. Alpha Pokemon in the wild as well. The fact that you can run into a battle and you think, oh, it's a one-on-one, and then all of a sudden two wild Pokemon go, well done, you're beating up our mate. No, you're not doing that. And then you
start getting hurt yourself.
Yes.
I mean,
yes.
Come on. Like a slight survival element. Brilliant.
Yeah. It's fantastic. And someone described it as Soul's Light to me, which I can see that comparison. I think it does Legends Arceus a disservice because Souls-like games are typically aimed towards more older players, whereas, let's be honest with you, Pokemon is typically, it needs to be more... It needs to have gameplay that is easy enough for the younger generation to pick up, but has enough depth for the older generation to really appreciate it, which is one of the reasons why both me and my daughter can play Legends Arceus and can enjoy it. The first time you fight the Kleavor, and it's like, oh no, you're not battling it. You are literally having to dodge its attacks and throw things at it. I was like, this is phenomenal. This is what I want for Pokemon moving forward. And Scarlet and Violet comes out, and just to kind of lean this back into that art style thing, it just seemed to go backwards in not just gameplay, but art style for a lot of different things, unfortunately.
It almost feels like they brought out this incredible thing and then they said, and now here's your main treat. It's the thing I gave you last time, but we unlocked all the out of bounds areas to be in bounds.
The reason why it's because it's not just one team at Game Freak that develops everything, it's multiple teams. So obviously Scarlet and Violet is in production at the same time as Legends Arceus, at the same time as BDSP at Ilka. And I imagine there isn't a lot of communication going on between, or not enough communication going on. And for all we know, because we're not, we don't have the insights into Game Freak, for all we know, Scarlet and Violet, the team developing Scarlet and Violet, were told about the catching mechanics of Legends Arceus, and they just went, not in our game. No. Like, you can do that in yours, but that's not something we want to touch.
Yeah.
Legends Z to A, I would like it to take more from Legends Arceus than it does from Scarlet and Violet. And I'm hoping that's the case, because for the longest time I was worried that Legends was just going to be a one and done. It's, the higher ups of Game Freak were like, no, you got that out of your system, now back to what we've always done.
I'm
glad that's not the case.
The main games, they follow a formula. We know that is basically a rule as far as we can tell. Absolutely makes sense, but if Legends is really going to be its own series moving forward, then I am here for it.
Mm-hmm.
I want to see more cool art styles. I want to see more shaking up of that formula, because I doubt Z2A is going to follow the exact same formula that Legends Arceus did, with, you know, you're ranking up to level 9 and you quell angry Pokemon beasts by lobbing food at them.
Yeah. Who knows? Yeah.
I doubt they're going to do that exact same thing again. They might. We'll have to find out.
We will. We will. Luis, I think that's the show for this week.
It's been an absolute experience. Thank you for having me on.
Good. No, it's been an absolute blast to have you on. As always, it is great to catch up with you and just geek out about Pokemon stuff. I absolutely love it. And that's the show for this week. If you've gotten this far, you're just top dollar, aren't you? Before you go, we'd really appreciate it if you could leave a review on the podcast platform of your choice. If you're watching on YouTube, then please leave a like and subscribe if you're not already subscribed, as of course it really helps out I don't know why I'm stumbling at the end. I'm tired. If you've got comments or questions, you can reach us by leaving the comments on our podcast on YouTube, by emailing goldenrodpod@gmail.com, by leaving it on our Discord channel, or by using the hashtag goldenrodpod on Twitter. Luis, I'm aware I'm pointing you on the spot here, but where can people find you?
I'm on YouTube at L Harrowing. You can also just, you know, go on to Captain Fidget's channel, leave a nice comment for me under one of the videos, because I'm the one who put it together.
I'd love that. And I'm Ben. You can find me as Professor Hoenn Gaming on YouTube and Professor Hoenn on Twitter. We'll be back next Friday for another week of Pokemon podcast content. See ya.
See ya.
Oh, you did it. Hey.